Today on Vox Talks Economics, does misinformation undermine our trust in the news? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. Remember, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram as well at Vox Talks Economics. COVID-19 was caused by 5G masts. Kamala Harris was involved in a hit and run and tried to cover it up. And Taylor Swift demanded an end for US funding for Ukraine. All popular and at the time widely believed news stories, and of course, they're all not true. Today, AI makes it all too easy to generate and distribute convincing-looking fake news stories, pictures, even videos. Ruben Durante of the National University of Singapore, Pompeo Fabra University, and CPR, of course, is one of the authors of a new discussion paper that tests how AI-generated misinformation might affect our desire for real news. And he joins me now. Ruben, welcome back to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, team. How are you doing?
Ruben, there has always been fake news. Is the problem getting worse now because of Gen AI?
The concern about the presence of fake news in the media, and particularly on social media, already exists. Mm-hmm. And it clearly predates the introduction of AI. However, with generative AI, it just makes it easier, faster, and cheaper to produce what we call fake content or synthetic content, audio, video, etc., that is virtually indistinguishable from real one, and so increase the potential to aggravate this problem.
And who is benefiting from this type of misinformation, or I suppose we might call it disinformation?
It's not clear who benefits directly from this type of misinformation. Also, some commentators have warned against the risk that disinformation campaigns may be due to the effort of foreign regimes to destabilize democratic societies, particularly in times of election. On the other hand, it's also plausible that this content is produced domestically by organizations interested just in attracting traffic through clickbaiting, mm-hmm. and that these fake stories are amusing and attract a lot of attention. So this would be some good candidates for that.
We always look for someone who benefits from the information, but a lot of people are benefiting financially just from the clicks, just from the engagement.
Absolutely. The more people you can attract to your website, either if content is true or false, the more you can benefit from this through advertising and so on.
What is the risk for news organizations that we're talking about today if we as consumers of news cannot tell the difference between real news and fake news, misinformation?
So news organizations are in the business of producing quality content through research, investigative reporting, and so on. News that people value and are willing to pay for, right? Either directly by buying a newspaper or subscribing to it online and so on. So if we get to the point where readers cannot distinguish quality content from fake content, then this can jeopardize this entire business model.
On the other hand, you are making the argument in this paper that there is potentially, you'd hesitate to call it good news, but there's a positive side to it. This could also make high quality news more valuable. How could this happen? What's the mechanism?
Yeah, so the argument is quite intuitive, we think, is, you know, if the spread or is this flood of fake content leads to a general decline in trust in the media, then the value of trustworthiness and of a solid reputation as producer of the quality news may actually increase. So it's a very simple argument. If a resource becomes scarce, its value will increase. And in this case, the resource is the reputation or the trustworthiness.
When we are fooled by fake news, there are economic consequences as well. In 2024, Fabrice Collard told us about his research into the uncertainty that fake news creates and how this effect is undermining economic stability. Follow Vox Talks Economics to listen to How Fake News Shapes the Business Cycle, first broadcast on 17th of May 2024.
Okay, so your experiment in this paper, it was conducted by Süddeutsche Zeitung in Germany. Can you describe this newspaper, the type of news that it's going to publish, the sort of readers it attracts?
We were lucky enough to be able to collaborate with Süddeutsche Zeitung. So for the non-Germans in the audience, Süddeutsche Zeitung is one of the top, the most reputed news outlets in Germany. Mm-hmm. It's based in Bavaria, is almost 300,000 online subscribers on top of the normal sales. Its political slant is, you know, somewhat to the center left. You can think of this as the German New York Times or The Guardian. Mm-hmm. The type of readers is the same. Mostly, it's quite broad, but mostly from urban areas, relatively high average age. Not only from Bavaria, you should really think of this as a national newspaper that is actually quite extensively read.
And what did you want to test in this experiment?
The idea was to essentially make subscribers of the Süddeutsche Zeitung realize how hard it is today to distinguish fake content from real content. Just increase their awareness about this difficulty. How would this affect their trust in the media, both in SZ, as we call it, and in other media, and also their willingness to pay for subscription to a quality newspaper like SZ? When you become aware that you are defenseless, they're more vulnerable to this fake content, how do you react?
So you need a sample of the readers. How did you find that sample? And what sort of sample is it?
Through Süddeutsche Zeitung, we were able to reach out to their subscribers. Mostly, the vast majority of our sample is subscribers. A lot of people accepted to participate in our survey experiment. Mm-hmm. And so really, this sample of readers is primarily subscribers. But we wanted to focus on people that are starting with have a high trust in a media outlet. In particular, these are people that pay for a subscription. So obviously, they're interested in news. And they have, and we can test that, they have a very high trust, particularly in the source they subscribe to start with.
Yeah, so you've got this sample of readers, and as you say, they are committed because we get a lot of news for free, but they choose to pay for it. They clearly have some motivation here. When you experiment on them, what are you doing?
It's a pretty simple experiment. So we randomly assigned the subscriber that accepted to participate in a treatment group and a control group. In the treatment group, we show these subjects three pairs of images, one of which is produced with AI and one of which is real. Mm-hmm. And we just ask them to tell us whether they think if one of the image is an AI generated, both of them, none of them, and if so, which one? So they just have to answer this question. To the control group instead, we wanted them to engage with images, but not really to think about AI, but to look at these images and answer some questions about what country this image was produced. And so we had some image about floods, we had some images about politicians, some image about protests.
For the treatment group, though, are you testing them and giving them a score, anything like that? Or are you just activating their imagination about this?
The goal is to make them think about how difficult it is, but also we tell them how they did. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, we also ask them, how well do you think you did? And yeah. The treatment was pretty hard. The vast majority of people were not able to guess. It was much harder than in the control group where more people were able to answer the question appropriately. So
yeah.
The answer is yes, we were able to do, we did this quiz hard and it was hard. People clearly realize that, I'm not that capable of distinguishing as I thought I would.
Now you're looking to their response afterwards. What response are you testing? How do you test it?
So we have two sorts of outcomes. The first one is on our survey. So right after the experiment, they were asked to answer some questions, in particular questions about trust in SZ, the news outlet, in other media, and so on. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing of collaborating with the news outlet itself is that they follow their subscribers. They have information on their subscribers beyond just survey questions, right? We can follow the behavior of these readers, of these subscribers, in the days and months following the experiment. So in addition to whatever they tell us, we can also look at their actual behavior, which is a big advantage.
So it's not just their response to this, but we're also seeing their revealed preference, what they actually do. Does this reduce their trust in all news if you've been showing them these fake pictures?
The answer is yes. When we look at the survey responses, when you ask people in the control, in the treatment, how much you trust different sources, we see that overall confidence, overall trust in all the media, including SZ, to which they subscribe, actually goes down. Mm-hmm. It goes down substantially. So the treatment works. In a sense, we are increasing their awareness of their difficulty to disentangling, to separate fake from real content. And this seemed to affect their trust in the overall news landscape.
So this reduces their trust in SZ, but are they engaging with SZ less? Are they using it less afterwards?
No, in fact, we find the opposite. So they do report that they trust SZ less, but they actually, if you look at their behavior in the days after and in the months after, we find two interesting results. So their engagement in terms of number of pages they visit on a daily basis, especially in the days right after the experiment, actually increases. But most importantly, you know, for us, but especially for SZ, the propensity of these readers to remain subscribers, or at least not to cancel their subscription, actually increases. It's a monthly subscription that automatically renews unless you do something to discontinue it. So we have the retention rate. How many people stay, how many people cancel, how many people actively suspend their subscription, and that number for the treatment group is lower than for the control groups. So essentially, the story is more nuanced. Overall trust in all the media, including SZ, goes down, but engagement with the source that you tend to trust increases, and you're more likely to remain a subscriber than similar people in the control group.
So now some of us tend to overestimate our ability to spot misinformation, and we think we're better at it than we really are. Are these average effects that you discovered, are they consistent for all types of readers? Because you had quite a large sample, I think.
We have quite a large sample, so we can do what economists call this heterogeneity analysis, meaning is the effect similar for different type of people, or do we see some differences? So the first difference that we see is whether people that found the quits more challenging, do they react differently than people that found the quits easier? And of course, whether people found the quits easier or harder, it correlates very significantly with their actual performance in the quits. But we prefer to use how did they feel rather than how they actually perform. And we find that people that found the quits harder, of course, react differently. Their decline in trust is stronger, which, again, is not surprising. But also the effect on engagement that I was mentioning before is actually higher.
I see. So you get a more extreme result going in both directions.
The decline in trust is comparable, but the effect on the engagement is higher. And then we also look at other dimensions. In particular, we're interested in understanding whether people that are more likely to follow politics among subscribers, they react differently. So we know, remember, we know what pages they were visiting before and after the experiment. So we look at what are the people in our sample. They were more likely to visit pages on SZ platforms about politics versus not. Mm-hmm. We actually find the effect is stronger for people that are not as engaged with politics. And this is interesting because our questions in the experiment were about politics, at least two out of three. The third one was on floods. You can think of floods being related with climate change. So all three have some kind of politics in it. And so we do find that people who are not really into politics, for them, the effect is stronger. Now you can think of these people having a less strong prior when it comes to these issues, and especially when it comes to misinformation and how AI can affect misinformation about politics. So they are the one that seems to update their beliefs about this risk and to react more to that.
These results, on the one hand, they're quite encouraging. Well, I mean, they're encouraging for journalists like me. But SZ subscribers, they are not your average news consumers. And every day I see on Instagram and X people who care very little about the news, or they actively distrust what's called the mainstream media these days as a term of abuse. Would this effect apply to them as well, do you think?
The choice of the sample, the type of people we're dealing with, is people that subscribe to this newspaper and have a high interest in news, not necessarily in politics, but high interest in news and trust in this outlet. On the other hand, these are people that trust the outlet a lot, so it's not clear that you would expect a decline in their trust. Our sample is quite special. It's people who trust a lot, they're engaged readers and so on. So we don't really know how this would translate to people who are more casual readers or more skeptical readers, are you saying? This calls for further research. We see this hopefully as the first step of a longer collaboration with SZ, but also it calls also for experiments, maybe not with subscribers. We cannot predict what the results may be and how our current result extends. That calls for more research, both by us and hopefully by other people.
I can understand why all news outlets might be interested in the sort of research you're doing and the sort of results you're getting. From what we know so far, is this suggesting a business strategy for newspapers that might be somewhat similar? So I'm thinking of like the New York Times that you've mentioned already has a lot of subscribers. The FT, for example, in the UK, the Financial Times, that has a lot of subscribers. Does it suggest something that they can do positively in the face of this problem of AI-generated news?
I think it suggests that newspaper outlets that have a reputation and people recognize are trustworthy have to be proactive. There are two roads that you can take. One is that people recognize your ability to deal positively with AI and accompanying people in the experience of AI, right? Providing a tool to help people distinguish between fake and real content. Being perceived as this is an outlet that can help me navigate this new information landscape, as opposed to the worst case scenario would be this is an outlet that themselves are making a very unwise use of AI so that can decrease the trust that people have in you, right? So it really depends what kind of course of action each outlet will decide to take, but it could be seen potentially as a way to increase your stance in the perception that people have of you. I wouldn't say turn this into a comparative advantage, but we could go one way or the other.
A lot of people now can make really convincing fake news using AI. And so the amount and the technical quality of misinformation might continue to increase. Does this make this problem harder to solve?
As time progresses, the ability of these tools and how widespread they will be will increase. The possibility of producing this content will become basically unlimited. Mm-hmm. And so we think that the problem may become more severe, but also the opportunities for news outlets that are able to navigate this new landscape may also improve. There's a lot of concern about the fusion of AI may completely destroy trust in the media, trust in institutions. It is a possibility, but it's not the only one.
What would you say are the worst case? And I suppose we should finish off with the best case for trust in society if we manage to not solve or solve this problem.
So worst case, the widespread distrust in all news sources essentially make the business model of high quality papers unfeasible. And then you will see the collapse in the entire media landscape. But the positive side is that quality outlets manage more and more to distinguish themselves. They are very proactive in the type of strategies they use. This can potentially lead to improving their situation.
Let's hope for the good outcome. Ruben, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called Gen AI Misinformation, Trust and News Consumption, Evidence from a Field Experiment. The authors, Felipe Campanchi, Ruben Doranchi, Felix Hagemeister and Ananya Sen. It is discussion paper 20526 at CPR.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber. And our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, how can we spot the entrepreneurs who are most likely to succeed?